Ladies and gentlemen, throwing you a curveball this week. We figured we would give you a taste of what it's like to be a patron.
The Manifesto series.
What is that manifesto called, Stu?
Industrial Society and Its Future. Who is it by, Aaron?
Ted Kaczynski, the Unabomber. So if you like what you hear here today, then head over to Patreon. This is a Patreon exclusive, ordinarily, but we figured we would give you part one. So you can understand what it's like
to be a patron.
To be a patron. And to get inside of the mind of Ted Kaczynski, as that's what we're looking to do, is get inside of the mind of a notorious killer.
And dissect him and see if we can figure him out.
Exactly. So until next time, trust no one, question everything. Ladies and gentlemen, and by that I mean obviously strictly our patrons, because today is the first ever Patreon exclusive.
I'm so excited.
So excited. I am your host, as you know, because, you know, you're a patron and you're the real deal. Aaron, joined as usual by my good buddy, pal, Sexy Pants co-host, Stu. What's happening, Stu?
Oh, I'm so excited to kick off the first Patreon episode.
I am too. Man, talk about just falling in shit, and I come right out smelling like a rose with this idea. And I named it on Facebook, in my opinion, very adequate name, Manifesto. The Manifesto series that we're going to be doing, Patreon exclusive, just for you guys, because you're all fantastic.
Every manifesto we can find.
Absolutely. So what we're going to do with this, we're not going to be like reviewing coffees at the beginning. Obviously, it goes without saying we do have coffee. Just Folgers Black Silk today. I'm on like my fourth pot, but whatever. That's fine. That's just who I am as a person. You've all grown to love and accept that, and I appreciate you. So starting out with a real banger here, the first manifesto we're going to cover is like the manifesto. It is the Industrial Society and Its Future by Theodore Kaczynski.
I loved that movie he made, A Quiet Place.
Huh?
Oh, that's John Krasinski.
Oh, John. Ah, John. And funny enough, I think, isn't Theodore's brother's name John?
I don't know.
Let me back up. We didn't put together an outline to talk about the Unabomber. We're going to do that in a future episode. Obviously, we both know a great deal about the Unabomber and Ted Kaczynski. We've gone down that wormhole several times, but don't have a shit ton of information in front of us regarding his life. I mean, I feel so weird saying for anybody because it's just for the patrons.
But they are people still.
Right.
They are still people.
I know, but that's why I'm getting so tied up about it. So, obviously, you know, Remco and Emily know because they commented. So they're both very excited. But for if you know, any other guys.
Why are you making this weird?
I don't know. I don't know how to record things just for patrons. I'm so weirded out about it. Like,
there's still people there, and they still want to listen.
I know, but they love us more, so letting them down is worse. Like, if I let down the general public, that's normal day-to-day life. But, like, this is...
Yep.
I don't want to let down patrons. So Ted Kaczynski was the Unabomber. For anybody that doesn't know who the Unabomber was, basically a domestic terrorist, anarchist, who decided to be a sweet idea to send bombs in the mail to get his point across.
The good old days.
Yeah, he's a...
To be able to send a bomb in the mail.
Yeah, that didn't go through x-ray machines and shit. Dude was a former mathematics professor. He was a math prodigy, insanely, insanely smart. If you don't know enough about Ted Kaczynski, there's documentaries and shit on YouTube. Go watch those. They're very informative.
Or just listen to our episode that we're going to release in a couple weeks, Aaron.
Yes, do that too, obviously. And you guys will have early access to that too, by the way. But you guys have exclusive access to this today. So ultimately, Teddy Boy decided it'd be a sweet idea to write a manifesto. And so therefore, Stewie and I decided it'd be a sweet idea to read through this manifesto in a Patreon exclusive episode to try to get inside of the mind of a serial killer, because this is one of the most drastic serial killers that's really ever existed. He was caught basically by writing this manifesto and his brother being like, holy shit. This actually, not even his brother. It was his brother's wife was basically like, hey, even though we don't talk to your weird brother that decided to be a sweet idea to quit all of his jobs just to live a more primitive lifestyle, a.k.a. bomb people.
Oh.
This shit sounds a lot like Teddy. And then his brother's like, damn.
That is Teddy in a nutshell.
You're right. This is Teddy. This has to be Teddy.
All 34 pages of Teddy's mind just going to hell.
Yep. So I guess without further ado, we jump into this bad boy.
You are going
to
hear a lot of paper flipping.
Yeah, you are. Because, I mean, I, of course, had to have a physical copy because it's almost like going against everything that Ted Kaczynski wanted us to do. I feel like a real dick. Sorry, Ted Kaczynski. No, I'm not.
Nope.
But yeah, so the manifesto was called Industrial Society and Its Future. It was written in 1995. So, introduction. And I figure as we go through this, to be honest, neither one of us has ever read this before. We're borderline winging it, but we're going to kind of give our own thoughts on this shit as we're going through it. And I'm going to go ahead and, hang on, where's my gain?
What are you doing?
Just give me a minute. Hang on. Touch
it. Microphone's going up. Going down.
Okay, am I okay back here now?
Yeah, you're good.
On my level. Okay, good. See, we can be so honest with you guys and let you know that we're still...
We suck.
...technologically stupid when it comes to trying to handle the logistics of shuffling through paper while, recording something. Okay, so, introduction. The Industrial Revolution and its consequences have been a disaster for the human race. They have been greatly increased, the life expectancy of those of us who live in advanced countries, but they have destabilized society, have made life unfulfilling, have subjected human beings to indignities, have led to widespread psychological suffering, and then in parentheses, in the third world to psychological suffering as well, and have inflicted severe damage on the natural world. The continued development of technology will worsen the situation. It will certainly subject human beings to greater indignities and inflict greater damage on the natural world. It will probably lead to greater social disruption and psychological suffering, and it may lead to increased physical suffering, even in quote-unquote advanced countries.
I mean...
So far, I like how that was his, like... I feel like he's writing a thesis.
Right.
Like, that was a very thesis intro so far. I mean, that's not the full intro, but so far, personally, I think he's onto something.
Right. I mean, it's not like what he just said is wrong.
Right.
Everything, the more advanced things get, the shittier the human race becomes.
Right. Exactly. And the more dependent on technology we become. The more damage we're doing to
why do I feel like he's sitting in a treehouse writing this?
No, because a tree,
candlelight.
Just in a tree, because the treehouse would defeat the purpose of what he's going for here. That would mean he's using manufactured lumber.
Just sitting at the top of an old oak.
Right. Writing this barefoot with his pants rolled up. Pants that were made out of hemp, by the way, probably. So continuing on here. The industrial technological system may survive or it may break down. If it survives, it may eventually achieve a low level of physical and psychological suffering, but only after passing through a long and very painful period of adjustment, and only at the cost of permanently reducing human beings and many other living organisms to engineered products and mere cogs in the social machine. Furthermore, if the system survives, the consequences will be inevitable. There is no way of reforming or modifying the system so as to prevent it from depriving people of dignity and autonomy. Again. I don't feel like he's far off here. I've had the exact same concerns. Like, because I do accounting for a manufacturing company. And as we continue to make things, you know, automated and things like that, and you reduce the jobs is always my biggest concern. So like making something automated, you take five people and you replace five people with one person that's capable of programming a machine, and you just had four people lose their jobs out on their ass, just like that. And if it becomes, I mean, everything's becoming this way.
That or just making their job easier and making them lazy.
Right. Yeah. And I mean, even when you look at it, like, you know, you go to Walmart or any store and it's like, we spent a bunch of money on these things where you can check yourself out. So that way we don't have to have the overhead of these employees.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, that's not necessarily exactly what he's saying, but it all relates. So he continues on, if the system breaks down, the consequences will still be very painful. But the bigger the system grows, the more disastrous the results of its breakdown will be. So if it is to break down, it had best break down sooner rather than later. And again, so basically what he's getting at here is that
the bigger they are, the harder they fall.
Yeah, like if we don't cut back on everything being autonomous, and if we don't stop, you know, making things this way, it's going to be more and more painful. Which he penned this in 1995. At the time, they didn't have, I mean, they had some automation. They were, you know, I mean, that's like CNC machines are coming out, all sorts of things like that, making things easier. But it wasn't like it was today, where imagine trying to tell a manufacturing company, yeah, you can no longer have that be automated. We need to go back to just having people. Like, right. he was right here in the sense that you, the further you get into this, the harder it is to backpedal. So he continues on. We therefore advocate a revolution against the industrial system. This revolution may or may not make use of violence. It may be sudden, or it may be a relatively gradual process spanning a few decades. We can't predict any of that. But we do outline in a very general way the measures that those who hate the industrial system should take in order to prepare the way for a revolution against that form of society. This is not to be a political, capitalized political, revolution. Its object will be to overthrow not governments, but the economic and technological basis of the present society. And so here, I think, is where we're getting, and again, we haven't pre-read through this, so everything that we're going to say here is new and spontaneous, and it's just our take on this. And he breaks it down in sections, so basically at the end of every one of his sections, we'll kind of comment. But I do, see, I feel like I'm taking his side too much here.
Well, don't worry, we're only halfway through page one.
Yeah. I like that he mentions that it's not political revolution, but rather economic and technological, because I think a lot of people, I think there's a thin line between the two.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that a lot of people think that if you think one way politically, you automatically agree with things that fall in that political genre. So I think, you know, it's like, I like the fact that he mentions that, but I also like I don't like this fact, but I'm noticing the fact that he's saying we, and now he didn't really have anybody. The dude lived secluded out in the middle of the woods in a weird little shed that that he made. Like, there was no we. It was him and a typewriter in there. And that, to me, almost points to multi-personality disorder.
Either that or he's just thinking of everybody as a whole.
Well, yeah. I mean, he might be thinking of, like, that he's speaking on behalf of himself and anyone who thinks that way, but the fact that he's like a hermit that lives by himself out in the woods,
right,
makes it seem odd to me that he's using the word we. You know what I mean? Like, you prefer to be alone, so the fact that anybody that prefers to be alone would use the word we,
right, instead of I. And
yeah, it kind of leads to multi-personality disorder in my mind, which, and a lot of people that met Ted would never have thought this. Like, the people that lived locally, he'd go to the library and read books. Little did they know, some of them were about bomb making and things, but like, they would never have guessed this. So moving on to part five. In this article, we give attention to only some of the negative developments that have grown out of the industrial technological system. Other such developments we mention only briefly or ignore altogether. This does not mean that we regard these other developments as unimportant. For practical reasons, we have to confine our discussion to areas that have received insufficient public attention or in which we have something new to say. For example, since there are well-developed environmental and wilderness movements, we have written very little about environmental degradation or the destruction of wild nature, even though we consider these to be highly important. Which,
again,
he's using we a lot, but wilderness movements, sorry, I just looked down and saw that word in his manifesto. Degradation and destruction of the environment was one of the biggest things that he was passionate about. So,
and that was big in the late 90s,
right,
early 2000s.
Yeah, and he wasn't the only one. I mean, the dude was, he's a hippie. And a lot of people back then were hippies, but
Al Gore.
Yeah, Al Gore.
Al Gore.
And so that's the end of the introduction. So now we're moving on to the section called The Psychology of Modern Leftism. So he says, and if you feel like reading at any time and want to cut me off, then feel free.
Okie dokie.
So he says, almost everyone will agree that we live in a deeply troubled society. One of the most widespread manifestos, because I've been using that word a lot today. One of the most widespread manifestations of the craziness of our world is leftism. So a discussion of the psychology of leftism can serve as an introduction to the discussion of the problems of modern society in general. Let's go over section 7 before we comment on that, because okay. he elaborates on what leftism is. But what is leftism? During the first half of the 20th century, leftism could have been practically identified with socialism. Today, the movement is fragmented and it is not clear who can properly be called a leftist. When we speak of leftists in the article, we have in mind mainly socialists, collectivists, quote-unquote politically correct types, feminists, gay and disability activists, animal rights activists, and the like. But not everyone who is associated with one of these movements is a leftist. What we are trying to get at in discussing leftism is not so much movement or an ideology as a psychological type, or rather a collection of related types. Thus, what we mean by leftism will emerge more clearly in the course of our discussion of leftist psychology. Also, see paragraphs 227 through 230. And let me just...
Are we going to flip there? I should have been prepared.
227 through 230 is a long ways away.
Well, yeah, because he's got to bring it back up. 227, huh? God, don't we sound like unprepared idiots.
Well, that's, we already told them we are unprepared idiots today. So do we go through 227 through...
Where is it?
I think we just move through it.
227.
In order of what he writes here.
Okie dokie.
Oh, or do we cover it and then come back?
God damn it, I just lost the page.
That's fine, we'll cover it. Okay, so 227.
What page? Right here.
Page 29. But first, let's comment on those.
God damn it. What we Son of a bitch.
Again, this kind of goes hand in hand with what we talked about on Pizzagate Part 2. Where I had the rant on not classifying me as anything.
Mm-hmm.
Because as a norm, this was penned in 1995, and as a norm, you would look at anybody who is gay or feminist or any type of activists or people who love dogs more than other people. You would classify them as being leftist or left-wing or liberal. And he mentions over here not to take that politically. So, and then he jumps right into modern leftism, which...
But like you said, some people like certain ideological? They like some of the ideas of leftists, but they don't want... They're not.
Right. Right, exactly.
So, that's what he's trying to say here.
Right. So he's basically saying, people that believe in these types of things, you can't just classify them. Or he's not classifying them as all being leftists. Just because somebody has viewpoints along these lines doesn't necessarily mean they're a liberal or a leftist or anything like that, which I don't think the word liberal was even really a thing back in 95. But he is calling attention to the fact that, hey, just because you have these viewpoints doesn't mean this that I'm
going to classify you as that.
Right. So going over to 227. Our discussion on leftism has a serious weakness. It is still far from clear what we mean by the word leftist. There doesn't seem to be much we can do about this. Today, leftism is fragmented into a whole spectrum of activist movements. Yet not all activist movements are leftists, and some activist movements, e.g. radical environmentalism, seem to include both personalities to the leftist type and personalities of thoroughly unleftist types who ought to know better than to collaborate with leftists. Okay. Varieties of leftists fade out gradually into varieties of non-leftists, and we ourselves would often be hard-pressed to decide whether a given individual is or is not a leftist. To the extent that it is defined at all, our conception of leftism is defined by the discussion of it that we have given in this article, and we can only advise the reader to use his own judgment in deciding who a leftist, or who is a leftist. Which is interesting. I mean... To basically, here I feel like he's kind of backtracking a little bit and kind of classifying people by saying, hey, use your own judgment to determine whether somebody's leftist or not, which to me is also a wrong approach. Like, you can ask somebody if they're a leftist. You don't automatically have to assume based on anything.
Don't assume, but judge them.
Right. Don't assume, but make your own assumption.
And I mean, granted, he wrote... I don't know how he put this all together.
Right.
Grant, I mean, in the seventh paragraph, he's already telling you to go to 227.
Well, and that's part of the psychologically.
But what I'm saying is that we're looking in the mind into the mind of a crazy person.
Right.
And he, even though makes what some would think are decent points... He repeats himself constantly already.
Right.
We're one page in.
Right.
And he's just saying the same shit over and over again to try and, I think, make it sound right in his minds.
Right. He's self-justification.
Right.
And what I notice here, too, is, damn it, what was I going to say?
You're welcome.
Thanks for that. What was I saying?
Mm-hmm.
Damn it.
I don't remember either.
Yeah, I don't either. So I guess we'll just move away from that wonderful point that I was probably going to make. So 228. But it will be helpful to list some criteria for diagnosing leftism. These criteria cannot be applied in a cut-and-dry manner. Some individuals may meet some of the criteria without being leftists. Some leftists may not meet any of the criteria. Again, you just have to use your judgment. Which is like... Why?
Right.
You're saying don't classify them, but you're classifying them.
All right. So don't think they're a leftist, but here I'm going to give you some reasons they may be leftists, but sometimes they might not be even with the reasons that I give you.
Right.
But just...
It's not cut and dry, but I'm going to give you reasons anyways.
But then you just decide what you think.
Which fits right back into the point that I was going to make that I just now remembered.
Okie dokie.
And I'm pointing at Stu with my entire hand. I didn't even just point a finger. Damn it.
No.
Oh, no.
He did it again.
I forgot again, you guys. No, I didn't. Yeah, I did. Okay, anyways, let's move on to 229, and I'm sure as I'm reading that one, I'll think of it, and then you'll make a point, and then I'll forget my point again.
Let's try it.
Okay. The leftist is oriented towards large-scale collectivism. He emphasizes the duty of the individual to serve society and the duty of society to take care of the individual. He has a negative attitude towards individualism. He often takes a moralistic tone. He tends to be for gun control, for sex education, and other psychologically, quote-unquote, enlightened educational methods, for society planning, for affirmative action, for multiculturalism. He tends to identify with victims. He tends to be against competition and against violence, but he oft finds excuses for those leftists who do commit violence. He is fond of using the common catchphrases of the left like racism, sexism, homophobia, capitalism, imperialism,
Colonialism.
Neocolonialism, genocide, social change, social justice, social responsibility. Maybe the best diagnostic trait of the leftist is his tendency to sympathize with the following movements: feminism, gay rights, ethnic rights, disability rights, animal rights, political correctness. Anyone who strongly sympathizes with all of these movements is almost certainly a leftist. Which, even in today's society, if you think about it, that is still the general assumption. You know what I mean? Like, for me, I don't classify as any of these things.
No.
But I support movements of leftists, quote unquote. I support movements of rightists, if that's what it's called, quote unquote. Rightists. I support things from both sides of it. So I could technically fall into the category of a leftist, even though I'm not a leftist.
Right.
You know what I mean? But in today's society, a lot of people, like, if I were to be like, yeah, I don't care if two gay people get married, why would I care? People would automatically assume, huh, you're a liberal, you're a leftist, blah, 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 blah. Wow, they took our jerks, you know what I mean? Like,
right.
And it's like, it's not necessarily the case, but he's making the exact same.
But then even jumping back to paragraph 7.
Stop, I remembered my thought. Time out. Okey-dokey. Because you were saying how he repeats himself a lot.
Yeah.
And then I
you're
think
repeating yourself a lot.
Yeah. And I think you were going to insinuate the fact that he jumped from this page to this page and be like, how would he?
Yes.
I think because I think it's from a almost like a self-absorption standpoint. Like, he's trying to make this thing so perfect as like his manifesto. This is his work and why. This is his why as a serial killer.
Right.
And this is him. This is self-justification. And I forgot the other point I was going to make.
Oh, no.
No, I didn't. I am so sorry, you guys. I'm so bad at this. Oh, my gosh.
Radio silence.
Why do I keep fucking doing this? So I think he's read through this so many times himself to try to make it perfect is basically what I was getting at. Like, the fact that he can jump here and there and cite sections that are this far forward and this far back, he's reading his own work.
Right.
Which, kind of crazy.
Yeah. I mean, and I guess for it to be all over the place, I mean, makes sense. But like you said, if he's read over it 7,000 times, it makes sense in his head why the leftist stuff is reoccurring 30 pages later.
Right.
And I mean, it probably won't make sense to us.
Yeah. And he's reinforcing himself constantly. For him, it's not being repetitive. It's reinforcement.
Right. And it's repetitive as fuck.
It's reinforcement as fuck, Stu.
Oh, but what I was going to say now is back in paragraph 7, he says, these people believe in this stuff, but that does not make them leftists.
Right.
The last sentence in paragraph 229, anyone who strongly sympathizes with all of these movements is almost certainly a leftist.
Right. Which, and what's blowing my mind about all this is, and I'm sure we'll understand his reasoning for this, but like,
will we though?
Well, I'm saying I'm sure he'll make his point multiple times, because once he gets onto a different subject, I'm sure he'll repeat that and try to reinforce it.
Right.
Because, and it's, this is all sociopathic too. Like, have you ever dealt with a sociopath? You're like, yeah, I do every day on this podcast.
it's Aaron. Guys, help.
People who are full-blown sociopaths like that, and this guy, even being a hermit that likes to be alone, still has sociopathic tendencies. Like, the fact that he feels any sociopath has a need to reinforce what they're doing.
Okay.
And what they're saying. A lot of times they'll end what they're saying with, you know what I mean? Or, right? Right?
Like, to reinforce, like, what they, for me, mm-hmm, to say, yes, I believe what you're saying.
Setting you up to almost feel obligated to agree with them.
So you make them feel better about what they're thinking.
Mm-hmm. So, and like, I granted, I have sociopathic tendencies. I'll be the first one to tell you I have sociopathic tendencies.
Right.
Right. You know what I'm saying? You get what I'm saying? You're picking up what I'm putting down? Even if I make it fun and spontaneous, like saying you're picking up what I'm putting down. I do have sociopathic tendencies. The difference between me and a serial killer, although there may be a thin line.
Is that you haven't killed anybody?
Is that I haven't killed anybody, for one, that you know of.
Okay, so there's two things.
And for two, well, no, I guess it's pretty much.
You haven't written a manifesto?
Well, no, I try to fight my... I try to fight my urge to force you to agree with me.
Okay.
Because I don't do that as a trying to force you to agree with me. I'm trying to get confirmation to see if you agree with me.
But you also listen to reasoning to an extent.
Exactly. If you were to rebuttal and say, no.
What you just said was stupid. This is why.
Then I would be like, okay, well, I understand that you have your viewpoint. I don't want to send you a bomb in the mail. That's the difference between me and Ted Kaczynski. And he said, refer to sections what now?
We got 230 now. Okay. So it's on this sentence.
So.
That is a big paragraph.
Damn, it is. Holy shit.
Some of them are like three sentences.
Yeah. The more dangerous leftists, that is, those who are most power hungry, are often characterized by arrogance or by a dogmatic approach to ideology. However, the most dangerous leftists of all may be certain over-socialized types who avoid irritating displays of aggressiveness and refrain from advertising their leftism, but work quietly and unobstructively to promote collectivist values. Quote-unquote, enlightened psychological techniques for socializing children, dependence of the individual on the system, and so forth. These crypto-leftists, as we may call them, he puts in parentheses, approximate certain Borges types.
I don't know what that word is.
I'm going to go with Borges. Types as far as practical action is concerned. And as I'm continuing this, look that word up really quick so we can get a definition for the people. Because we can just look shit up on the fly because this is...
I don't know. I found it. I got my phone.
So, Borges types as far as practical action is concerned, but differ from them in psychology, ideology, and motivation. The ordinary Borges tries to bring people under control of the system in order to protect his way of life, or he does so simply because his attitudes are conventional. The crypto-leftist tries to bring people under control of the system because he is a true believer in a collectivistic ideology. The crypto-leftist is differentiated from the average leftist of the over-socialized type by the fact that his rebellious impulse is weaker and he is more securely socialized. I looked at the wrong line. He is differentiated from the ordinary well-socialized Borges by the fact that there is some deep lack within him that makes it necessary for him to devote himself to a cause and immerse himself in collectivity. And maybe his, in parentheses he puts, well-sublimated, drive for power is stronger than that of the average Borges.
You want to hear how it's pronounced?
Yes, do it to the microphone too so everybody can hear it.
How do you turn that up, goddammit? There we go.
Bourgeois,
it's French.
Fuck, I was way off.
And Borges.
Borges.
Bourgeois is an adjective.
Okay.
Of or characteristic of the middle class, typically with reference to its perceived materialistic values or conventional attitudes.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Alrighty. He used that word quite a bit. Read that definition back to me one more time.
Hmm? It didn't say it right. Blah.
Bourgeois.
It stuttered. Of or characteristic of the middle class, typically with reference to its perceived materialistic values or conventional attitudes.
Okay, so basically he's saying all the middle... He's basically saying everybody that's middle class and materialistic, which especially in today's society, everybody's middle class and materialistic, except for the top 1% and the people that are fully unemployed. Otherwise, you're pretty much... Actually, I would say that anybody that goes on unemployment, especially during this pandemic, congratulations, you're middle class now. Because, like, everybody's middle class except for the top 1%.
You are...
Bourgeois.
Bourgeois. That's so the last suave. Time I'm doing that.
It's a suave move, though.
There's a thing on there that says learn to pronounce. I'm going to send you that link.
Perfect. We need that with a lot of words we say in this podcast. So, yeah, he's almost classifying every middle-class person as being a leftist. Mm-hmm. A bourgeois leftist.
A bourgeois. So now but back again, to page
don't,
one.
But don't assume and don't judge, but also make the assumption and make your own judgments. Okay, so now moving on to
paragraph 8.
Paragraph 8 here. Even so, our conception of leftism will remain a good deal less clear than we would wish, but there doesn't seem to be any remedy for this. All we are trying to do here is indicate in a rough and approximate way the two psychological tendencies that we believe are the main driving force of modern leftism. We by no means claim to be telling the whole truth after leftist psychology. Also, our discussion is meant to apply to modern leftism only. We leave open the question of the extent to which our discussion could be applied to the leftists of the 19th and early 20th centuries. Okay. Let's just jump into part 9 here.
Part 9.
The two psychological tendencies that underlie modern leftism we call, quote-unquote, feelings of inferiority and, quote-unquote, over-socialization. Feelings of inferiority are characteristic of modern leftism as a whole, while over-socialization is characteristic only of a certain segment of modern leftism. But this segment is highly influential. Okay, so over-socialized.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like pretty much everybody's over-socialized. I feel over-socialized even though I'm essentially a hermit living in, oh my God, I'm Ted Kaczynski.
Oh.
All right, until next time, trust no one, question everything. Feelings of inferiority, I feel like especially today, holy shit, the world moved in a way that Ted Kaczynski predicted.
100%.
Like, it's and starting like, to scare me.
Like, I was going to say back in paragraph 2 when he said that the technology is going to get, like, so advanced and everything. It's getting to that point, and I feel like he predicted robots killing us.
Yeah.
And taking over the world.
Probably the end game of this manifesto. the thing that freaks me out a little bit here, Stu, is, like, talking about feelings of inferiority. And his big concern was that everybody would become leftist.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Let me see how I reinforced it there because I'm a sociopath.
Yep.
So feelings of inferiority, and you think about how so he penned this in 1995. So you think of the last 25 years, everybody now has feelings of inferiority. Like, for example, when they throw a model, I mean, now they're trying to make it come back around to where the quote-unquote leftist viewpoint is that everybody's beautiful and things like that. But if you mm-hmm. think about the past 25 years, they throw America's Next Top Model out there and all this other bullshit. And it was like, if you're not
this, you're nothing.
Yeah. If you're not 6'5" and 100 pounds as a woman, you're not good enough to be a model. If you don't have perfectly straight teeth, you're ugly as shit. Kind of, you know what I mean? Like,
right.
They gave everybody in the entire world feelings of inferiority, which ultimately led to shit like depression, anxiety, which he mentions basically as that all being a result of industrial society.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of interesting how he's linking all of these things.
And then the over-socialization, which... we all have now, as soon as you pick up your phone.
Right.
Click on Facebook, Instagram,
uh-huh.
Twitter. That is way too much than the average person needs.
Right, exactly. And I mean, it's getting to the point where, again, it's almost like they're trying to combat that now.
And he was saying this back in 95 when mm-hmm. you couldn't just text your buddies or FaceTime them or twit and tweet.
Right. He was saying that about going to the bar, basically.
Right. The 7 people at the local bar is too much.
Right.
Not the millions of people that are looking at a picture on Instagram.
Yeah, apparently it just needs to be you, your...
Me, myself, and I.
And your mom. that you're making at your weird little desk that you made out of a piece of elm. And I think, honestly, okay, so this doesn't seem like a lot, but we've covered a lot of ground with this.
You listen to us ramble.
Yeah, and I don't necessarily, like, so the next section here is feelings of inferiority, which he really dives deep into, and then over-socialization, which he really dives deep into. So I think what would be best is we just continue,
You're looking at the ground talking, Aaron.
I'm sorry, Stuart. I'm sorry, you guys. I think we just kind of need to brush back over what he's saying here. And then next week, we'll pick up on feelings of inferiority and go from there. This isn't something that we want to just power through and just read you guys a book. We're really trying to get into this. This is going to be multiple episodes.
Stop it.
I'm sorry, Stuart.
Talk about repeating yourself. Holy shit.
Yeah, this is going to be a lot because we're still on page one, but there's a lot of shit.
I was going to say that we went through two, I guess, subjects in the first page, but the feelings of inferiority is a page and a half.
Yeah.
So we only went through one page. We've been doing that. We've been talking at you for about 42 minutes so far.
Right. And so obviously next week we won't have to explain what it is we're doing. You guys will know. So we'll be jumping right into it. But so far, kind of bizarre and kind of scary how much this guy hit the nail on the head. And hopefully I do not plan on, and you do the same because it's only fair to our listeners. We don't touch this until we sit back down next week.
Okay. You know what I mean? I'm not going
to
read it.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. We don't read ahead, and like we need to be taking this in as we're going. And then each week we'll post on the Patreon page about, we'll have like a, you know,
a Q&A sesh.
Not Q&A because we're not experts. We'll have like a let's talk about it kind of shit. Like here, the discussion forum. That's the
there
word
we go. Discussion
for.
Is the word.
Q&A, like we're a bunch of professors on Ted Kaczynski. But so far, it's kind of scary how much this guy's hit the nail on the head.
Yes.
Now, granted, he kind of contradicts himself a lot by saying, you know, oh, I hate leftists. A lot of leftists have these viewpoints, but not all people that have these viewpoints are leftists, so therefore I don't technically hate them because I hate leftists, but also not all leftists have these viewpoints. So.
Right.
Yeah. Kind of bizarre dude, and you can tell, I mean, not to toot his horn, but you can tell he's very well thought out about this. He's trying to really drive home his point.
Right. Just over and over and over again.
Yeah. He really hates leftists, you guys.
But the thing is, I mean, if you sit here and tell someone the same thing over and over again, they're bound to believe you eventually.
Right, exactly. Well, and that's another sign of sociopathy. And most serial killers, I'm going to say most because there might be some out there that weren't, but I would say 99.99% of serial killers are sociopaths. It's a trait that goes hand in hand. But again, not all sociopaths are serial killers. So just weird, interesting thing. So I think as we go through this and we talk with you, that's the thing. We want this manifesto segment to be where we're going through breaking this down. You guys will develop your viewpoints on what he's saying. We're developing our viewpoints on what he's saying. And we discuss it on the Patreon page. And we have this private discussion where we're all kind of trying to work together to
get inside this guy's mind.
Yeah, like really develop a profile. Like kind of how the FBI and all these government agencies form their profile on.
Right, we're just the off-brand FBI.
Yeah, we're web sleuths in a way, but in a cooler fashion.
Yeah.
Because we're not web sleuths.
Right. We're like that, but we're not.
Right, exactly.
We are that, but we're not.
Yeah. So instead of continuing to ramble, I think this is a good place to leave off for now. Next week we'll cover feelings of inferiority, and I mean we can read ahead right now and look at the topics. Over socialization would be the next.
The power of process, surrogate activities.
Yeah, but we'll probably just cover next week feelings of inferiority and chicka-pata, chicka-pata.
Well, and also let us know on the Patreon page if you want to sit here and listen to us ramble for 2.5 hours, or if you feel comfortable with a 45-minute episode.
Right, because that's the thing. We don't want to like take up your guys' entire day talking about this. I mean,
this is a lot of information to take in.
Right, exactly. We want to cover it on a piece-by-piece. I personally prefer to cover it on a piece-by-piece basis like this, so that way we all put our views and opinions together and develop our profile on Ted Kaczynski. Because then, as we do more manifestos in the future, we look at all these traits of Ted Kaczynski, compare it to Edmund Kemper, compare it to the Zodiac Killer, even though we don't know who the Zodiac Killer was. This sounds really bad to say. Zodiac Killer, my favorite serial killer of all time. I mean, I'm absolutely mind blown and fascinated by the Zodiac Killer, as I am with pretty much all serial killers. I can't help it.
Yep.
But yeah, so we start building profiles to really, because obviously the FBI will develop their own system. We'll develop our own system with you guys.
Right.
To really make profiles on serial killers and determine what all of the traits are. But yeah, I mean, this is exciting. I'm excited. I'm finally reading this manifesto because I've always wanted to. And then it's one of those things where you realize how long it is and you go,
I had thought you read it.
You would think that I would, wouldn't you? You would think that I would have already read this.
I would have thought you had already read it when you gave me the topic, and I didn't know you hadn't. So this is fun for everyone.
Exactly. We'll read a book together at one point too, maybe. But yeah, I guess until next time, trust no one, question everything.
And join us next week as we dive deeper into Ted Kaczynski's manifesto.
Yeah.